Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. You know what? We're sitting here just doing a good show, spitting out some good sports takes, having some opinions on the NBA and NHL.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people are, you know, we're having a good time and enjoying the show. And all of a sudden we have some conversations about who's the best action heroes. And then all of a sudden Twitter just blows up.
And so do our phones with texts.
All right. Calm it down, people.
Got 15 texts.
They're called opinions. We all have them.
I agree. And I don't know why we can't get texts on NHL stuff like that.
You don't need to make it personal.
I mean, I guess we talk about NHL names. We talk about the new Utah names. And people are like, oh, yeah, the interaction is great. But we just did a couple segments on Jokic. Nothing. Nothing.
But you do your Mount Rushmore of action heroes, all hell breaks loose.
Lights of fire.
No Charles Bronson?
No.
No, get Charles Bronson out of there.
No, I think Chuck Norris is probably. I would say Chuck Norris and Keanu Reeves are in front of Bronson.
Yeah. All right, joining us now, Andy Bailey. Let's get back to the NBA. What a night for NBA playoff action last night. Nobody does a better job breaking it down. He writes for Bleacher Report, and Andy joins us now. Andy, how you doing, man?
I am doing great. First of all, the answer that always comes to mind when I hear that question is Keanu Reeves, so I'm glad he got mentioned before I even started talking.
Keanu's in the mix. Look, you got your somebody asked Bruce Willis and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. Those two are certainly in the Mount Rushmore of action heroes. And they asked those two who the other two would be. And Bruce Willis got put on the list. Clint Eastwood got put on the list. Clint's got to get Clint off of there. And so I think we all agree on Bruce. It's just who's that fourth? Is it The Rock? Is it Keanu Reeves? Is it Chuck Norris? And this might surprise you, but people on Twitter have opinions on it. So, yeah.
They never have opinions on Twitter.
I know. It got a little crazy.
You go Keanu, Andy?
I think I might. I always – the John Wick series is incredible to me in terms of action. And then he's got The Matrix, and Speed is a classic. But I honestly think you might be able to make a case that John Wick is like the best action series ever, and he's the lead. So that's a pretty good argument for him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the John Wick movies, for sure. Big fan of what we saw last night, back-to-back games. You can't ask for more drama and crazier endings for those two games. I mean, the NBA's got to be loving life right now.
Spectacular, both of those finishes. I was in the arena for the Nuggets game, and the Knicks one is obviously playing right before tip-off, and I kind of keeping tabs on it on my computer, and the last time I checked, Philly was up 4 with, I don't even know what it was, 30 seconds left or something like that. And I had just kind of decided that game was over. Next thing I knew, I got a text message from a friend, and so I kind of watched how it finished, and it was just unbelievable sequence of events to close that game out, and then to follow it up with the way that Denver won. I feel like New York's comeback was more of like an explosion there at the very end, where Denver's was like this entire half. They had to erase a 20-point deficit, and obviously the buzzer beater was huge too, but you're absolutely right. They got the NBA has this doubleheader on TNT, and both the games were just phenomenal at the end, so I'm sure they're giddy about what happened last night.
Are we watching one of the greatest runs of a player in NBA history in Nikola Jokic over the last few years?
I think absolutely. There's no question about it to me. And I feel like I've kind of been pounding the drum, maybe obnoxiously so, for a few years now. But it seems to be catching on with more national media people. Production-wise, there's literally never been a four-year run like this. I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but in the regular season, he's around somewhere like 26 points, 12 rebounds, 8 or 9 assists a game, which is just crazy. And then you layer on top of that the efficiency with which he scores. Basically inside of 10 feet, those little flip shots and runners and hooks and stuff just feel completely automatic for him. And then somehow, even with this ridiculous level that he plays at in the regular season, he's better in the playoffs every year. And the criticism he got during the first couple years of this four-year run was about them going out early, but they didn't have Murray or Porter for one of those runs. He didn't have Murray for one of them. Now that he's got his full team back, they often look like a juggernaut in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think this is absolutely one of the best runs we've ever seen. It's certainly the best individual run since I've been covering the NBA, which goes back almost 15 years now. Even that sounds crazy coming out of my mouth because I instantly think of LeBron with the Heat and Stephen Curry in the mid-2010s. Those guys obviously won more titles. But just in terms of individual production, I've never seen anything like this.
Felt like when the Lakers walk off that court losing that game and blowing that 20-point victory, that, look, nobody really gave them a chance in the series anyway, but that game may have broken them, and they may not, I don't know, after that one. You know, I thought you'd see a gentleman sweep where they may win game three and lose in five. I don't know if they win a game in this series now after that one.
Yeah, I don't even know what you'd be thinking after that. They have gotten used to the script, so to speak. They've now lost 10 straight to Denver, and a lot of them have gone not quite as dramatically as last night, but similar. I mean, they'll get a lead in the first half, and then it's just gone when Denver turns it on in the second. So they're used to it, but last night was especially gut-wrenching, I'm sure, for them, because they were up 20, I think, with like 9 or 10 minutes left in the third. And when you get to a 20-point lead, I know the modern NBA is different than it used to be, but 20 still feels like a pretty big number, and they had to have some confidence. D'Angelo Russell was hitting shots. I think at that point in the game, Anthony Davis had only missed one shot. So they had to feel like, okay, finally we've got this. You know, we're going to break this curse that we have against the Nuggets, and then all of a sudden the same thing happens again. And they seemed sort of befuddled by the result. A lot of the players were just kind of standing on the court afterward. It looked like they'd been hit by a truck. LeBron chased the referees off the floor, and then him and Russell and Darvin Ham are all talking about the officiating after the game. It's like they were just grasping at straws trying to figure out what in the world just happened to us over the last hour or whatever it was.
You know, if Jamal Murray doesn't sink that shot, we're probably talking about LeBron James and his individual performance, because it really was spectacular. But I'm curious, in that final possession, I think there was maybe 9-10 seconds left. Are you a little bit surprised that, seeing what Jamal Murray did through three quarters in about 10 minutes, are you a little surprised that that ball never touched Jokic in that final possession?
I think typically I would be. There seemed to be sort of a concerted effort from Jokic that entire game to just keep going to Murray. And Murray talked about that both to TNT and then in his post-game presser. He was telling teammates, basically, I'm sorry, I'm off, I'm going to start trying to find you guys. And they kept telling him, no, keep shooting, we're going to keep coming to you. And there were several times throughout the game where Jokic caught the ball and barely even looked at the basket. And I thought, man, he feels like he should be more aggressive. And I think sometimes that's the case. But I actually, you know, after the game and after hearing how Murray described his teammates, I thought, I feel like Jokic was just pushing to keep going to Murray. And in fact, when that possession starts, I think Porter gets the rebound and just hands it off to Murray. He starts bringing up the floor, and all Jokic is doing is waving at guys to get out of the way. I think that was going to be a pick and roll into an ISO the whole way, because Jokic is obviously Denver's best player. But there have been many games over the last few years where when it comes down to the wire, Murray's the guy that takes those huge shots.
So is there anybody, after what you've seen early in the playoffs, I mean, is this just a foregone conclusion, Denver's winning this thing again?
I do think Denver's the best team, and if the question was should Denver win, my answer is yes, and it has been for months. I think Boston can beat them, even though they were 0-2 against them this season. The way that they play is fascinating to me from like a statistical perspective. They get up so many threes, And if they have four hot shooting nights, that's the series. Denver has some good shooters too, but they don't get them up anywhere near as often as Boston does. So I could see them just having four hot shooting nights and beating the Nuggets. I think that's a possibility. I do think, you know, the West is loaded with talent. Once again, that's like the same old story with this conference every year. So I wouldn't be stunned if like Kawhi Leonard got healthy and the Clippers upset them at some point. I don't know what to say about Phoenix right now. I kind of feel like a similar thing with them, but now they're down 1-0 to the Timberwolves. So who knows? OKC, I would be less worried about if I was Denver. I just think it's really hard to make a deep playoff run when it's your first playoff run. And they kind of looked like that kind of a young and experienced team in their first game. So it's kind of a long-winded way of saying I wouldn't be stunned if Denver loses to a handful of different teams, but I do think they're the best one left in the field.
What was so broken with Dallas in game one against the Clippers, and can they get things turned around tonight in game two?
That is a great question. That was a first half that stunned me. First of all, I think Los Angeles's defensive intensity, I think, threw them for a loop. They seemed kind of half engaged to start that game, and the Clippers certainly were not. I mean, they were fully engaged. They were flying around, hitting threes. So I think that kind of knocked Dallas back on its heels. And by the time they realized, oh, shoot, this is a playoff game, it was too late. I mean, they made a couple half-hearted runs in the second half, but it never felt truly threatened. So I think part of it was just sort of surprised by the moment, which is kind of weird because Luke has been in the playoffs plenty of times. Kyrie has too. But maybe that supporting cast needs a little bit more seasoning. So that was part of it. And then I thought the biggest surprise, or maybe the biggest X factor might be a better way to put it, in that game was James Harden. You just kind of assume that the Clippers were going to be drawn dead without Kawhi. And then all of a sudden, you know, James Harden of 3 years ago shows up, at least for the first 2.5 quarters or something. And that was a huge difference. So it was, to me, it was Harden playing a lot better than he has for the last 2 months, and LA just being really dialed in defensively. I think in one of those quarters, Dallas only scored 8 points.
The second.
Kind of shocking. So that's a series I still think is going to go long. Like that game surprised me, but it didn't necessarily change my opinion of the series. I thought from the beginning either team could win, and it's probably going to go 6 or 7. So the game two in that one's going to be really interesting to see.
Andy Bailey joining us right now on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. What's your theory as to why Rudy Gobert is so wildly disliked by his peers?
That's such a good question. Something that I've wondered about for many, many years. Years ago, I wrote specifically about the Jazz for various different outlets, and I kind of started doing that as he was ascending. And to me, he was always a joy to cover, a joy to watch, a phenomenal defender, great finisher inside. I think part of the disconnect, he doesn't have like the traditionally aesthetically pleasing game that a lot of casual fans are drawn to, like fancy dribbling and fadeaways and three-pointers. He's a lob threat. He's a rim runner. I mean, that's kind of the extent of his offensive game. And people don't understand how valuable that is, I think, is part of the problem. And they don't understand that he's, to me, he's one of the very best to ever do that. I mean, he's near the top of all-time rim runners. So just the way he plays, I think, is different than people realize. I do think there's an aspect of he's not American. That's certainly something. I think that's part of the hesitance with people embracing Jokic for a long time too. It was this season, I think, at some point, Gilbert Arenas literally said on his podcast, "Get the Europeans out of here." He was talking about how the scoring had skyrocketed, and his podcast is discussing how do we fix this. And he literally said, "Get the Europeans out of the game," and everybody else on the show kind of laughed. And then 2 seconds later, they all realized he's serious. And he obviously doesn't speak for every general NBA fan, but I do think there are some out there who subscribe to some of that stuff. So that was part of it too. I think he was unfairly covered in the wake of the COVID stuff. I think he was wildly unfairly covered when he broke down in tears when someone asked him about his mom, talking about the All-Star stuff. So it's like, you know, brick by brick, this wall has sort of been built. I don't think there's a lot of merit to any of it, though.
Last thing before we let you go, what kind of head coach, and I know you've been covering him for years, what kind of head coach will Kevin Young be at the college level with BYU?
That's a great question. And the attorney who has an office right next to mine is a diehard BYU fan, so he was excited about that hire. I think he'll bring a lot of modern NBA offensive principles to BYU. That's kind of what he's been known for years in the NBA is he's an offensive guru. So I would expect maybe a more pro style offense with a lot of pick and roll, maybe some matchup hunting type stuff like you see in the NBA, maybe more 3-point shooting. And it's kind of, it may be an adjustment period for him, as I think it would be for any NBA to college coach, because a lot of the things that work really well in the NBA are based on the fact that NBA players are ridiculously skilled. And so you may have to dial back some of the stuff that you do there to a college atmosphere. But I think he's going to install a creative, modern offense, and BYU is going to be a lot of fun to watch under him.
Well, Andy, appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the playoffs, and we look forward to catching up again here very soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Andy.
You got it. Andy Bailey, one of the best, breaking down the NBA.